Good evening. Thank you for still being here. I'm really happy to be back. And thank you for being so patient with me. I realize I suffered a bit over it because it was an unfortunate situation. But I was very happy to have gone last week. It was very fun. Small group of people, all sort of gung-ho poets. And poets don't have much chance to talk to each other or to read their own work. So it was those little groups that get together and share readings always have a wonderful time. And everybody is enthusiastic and everybody applauds everybody else. And they have hints for, you know, where to publish and what to do. So I was very happy to have gone. And I'm not going to go again. So Tuesday night is for this only. So I was happy to have done it, but very glad to be able to come back and just commit to this one. Our life in this world offers so many opportunities for so many different things. It's amazing how many things are happening on Tuesday night. We could be doing a different thing every single Tuesday, really. So and for me, it's important to commit and to stay put. But it was a lot of fun. So, I don't know what you did last week. Did you read the Trust in Mind? Who is here?
We didn't. We just...
You just sat.
Sat and chanted and bowed and left.
Thank you so much. That's the best. Well, let's proceed. We did... we did 5, 6, and 7 last week before last. So I was thinking about looking at 7, 8, and 9, maybe 10. They all sort of run together, which begins on page 7 is really my favorite statement in this whole little poem. The way is perfect, like vast space, where nothing is lacking and nothing is in excess. Indeed, and this is the next line, it is due to our choosing to accept or reject that we do not see the true nature of things. Live neither in the entanglements of outer things nor in inner feelings of emptiness. Be serene in the oneness of things, and such erroneous views will disappear by themselves. So again, it has a lot of Taoism in it. Just talking about the way already is a Taoist notion before it was a Buddhist one. They brought them together using this concept. The way is perfect like vast space where nothing is lacking and nothing is in excess. Indeed, it is due to our choosing to accept or reject that we do not see the true nature of things. I've been reading a very, very interesting book. I'm reading the biggest book I ever saw. much less the biggest book I ever read. When it's open, it's this big in my lap. It's bright red, and it's called the Red Book. Does anybody know what it is? It's Carl Jung's journal. The a facsimile of his handwritten journal, the first part of it, plus all the illustrations that he did. Incredible. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mandalas, most beautiful mandalas I've ever seen. And then an English translation. And it's a kind of journey that he took trying to understand his mind and to understand the depth of the mind. He was willing to go wherever it wanted to go. And as he worked through many different things, his understandings sound remarkably familiar. Of course, because we all are the same mind, really. And if we look into it carefully, we come up with the same experience, basic experience. So I haven't gone very far in it yet, but where I've gone brought me to his discussion of the hero. And this feeling in us that's certainly our culture gives us a lot of reason to want to cultivate the hero, because that's what we get from a very early age. We get it in fairy tales, we get it in movies and novels, that the hero is the one who is fearless and takes all the risks and then gets the prize. And he points out that the hero is the one who always loses in the end, that it's a myth. And it's a myth that we, it's one way we understand ourselves, but if we don't understand the other side of it, that we're really losers, that we really, in the end, have nothing to gain, that there is no real hero. That's just hubris. That's human pride that puffs up and struts around and wants to be the best. And what he said was, the hero is ruled by the thought that this or that is good, bad, indispensable, etc. Saying exactly what Sen Kan is saying in here, that if we're ruled by the thought that things are good or bad or indispensable, that we're always judging, this we've got to have, this we don't like, this is good, this is bad. And Jung said we must learn to live with our incapacity, to actually admit and accept and learn to live with our incapacity to be perfect and the best and the undying king, queen, ruler of our life. It's really both sides. He says, only heroes say they are fearless, but you know what happens to heroes. So I found that very interesting. One thing that I was wondering or thinking to suggest, because of the way this is expressed, that it would be interesting for us to do an exercise between now and next Tuesday about what we really want. Because a lot of this is about wanting. Wanting this, not wanting, is the same as wanting. It's the same thing turned back. And of course we want many, many things. We want our life, we want to be healthy and happy and to have enough and all of those things. But in writing exercises, it's very interesting project to really go into what I want. And I thought it might be interesting in terms of this for us to do that too, if you like. And see what comes. It's a powerful question, really. And one we often overstep because we don't really quite know how to face it. Indeed, it is due to our choosing to accept or reject that we do not see the true nature of things. And I've been talking to a lot of people in the last couple of days who are so happy that the rain stopped. Oh, that rain was terrible. It was just awful. It just went on forever. And isn't it great that the sun is shining? But during the rain, people were all saying the opposite. You know, it's raining. We really need this rain. Isn't this wonderful that we're having all this rain? So every time something happens, we've got some kind of way of wanting it or not wanting it. It's a way of talking about things that we bring to each other. What do we talk about? We talk about the weather. This is a bad weather. This is a good weather. I like this weather. If it's really, really hot, we complain bitterly. Ah, it's too hot or too cold. But there's an old Zen saying, if it's hot, be hot. Because that's actually what we be. So another way of looking at this is what is being. And there are all the things that are flowing through us, the hotness and coldness and happiness and sadness. What do we be? Are we willing to be what is flowing through us as it flows through? Are we willing to accept what it is? So in Zazen, we watch our mind. And in Zazen, we're much more likely to be able to let go of our tight hold of our thinking. It's all thoughts. All our liking and disliking and wanting and not wanting. It's all thoughts about what's pouring through us. So to be free from clinging, from holding on, we say in the Meal Sutra, to be free from clinging, we must be free from greed. And if we pay attention, we can feel how greed rises in us. It's a very natural thing. You see it in a little dog at the butcher shop, too. It's the same thing. We're walking by the bakery and looking in. So many things. But if we're driven by greed, if we're so tightly held into things with our life. This oneness that he's talking about is invisible to us. To be aware and serene in the oneness of things. And such erroneous views will disappear by themselves. To be willing to be with things as they are. Or as Suzuki Roshi said, things as it is. It isn't they are out there, it's things as it is in here. This is where it happens. There's an appearance of things. He says in here, in the perspective of suchness, we can simultaneously appreciate both the absolute nature of things, empty of own being, empty of being a thing, and their provisional nature. Appearances coming and going and coming and going, causes and conditions that cause everything, all the different ways of things happening. And yet it's all of a piece. So that gives us time to talk a bit. Are questions? Discussion? Russ?
So what brought you to Jung? To read Jung?
I've been reading him all my life. Yeah. I'm very interested in how we are. And I've read a lot of Freud and a lot of all the in-between ones after that, the ones who came after. I've read a lot of philosophy also, from the very old guys to the newer ones. I'm not keeping up. I don't read nearly as much of that as I ever used to. But when I heard that the Red Book was published, I had to read it. I just had to do it. And I'm very happy to do it. He was so courageous and so wise. It's just a kind of confirmation. Have you read Jung?
Years and years ago.
Well, you...
puzzled about him. Not easy reading.
No, it's not easy reading. It's very interesting. This is not about... Well, I'm reading the early one, so it's not about alchemy, which is when it gets really complicated. It's much more simple than that. But it may get more complicated. It's dreams, a lot about dreams, which certainly affect us all also. There was one old Zen teacher who kept a record of all of his dreams. Left it to posterity, hundreds of years ago, and they still have that book, the dream book. So, interesting. Ron?
I was thinking what you talked about, the archetype of the hero. Zen has, or Mahayana has its own version, known as the Bodhisattva.
Yes.
Very typical. Although not so much into warfare, conquering aspect with weapons, the sort of weapons that maybe spiritual means.
Taigen has a very wonderful book about the bodhisattvas as they appear in many different guises, like Martin Luther King and Mother Teresa. And when you look at those, they are all very humble people who have enough courage to go ahead and do things that need to be done. So it's not that the bodhisattva is out wielding a sword and, you know, saving the day in some kind of football or legendary way, but in a much more underground, Koban used to say, bodhisattva is underground kind of person. Nobody notices, but the bodhisattva just sort of helps things along in a secret way. Julian?
In terms of like the hero, I somewhat disagree with, I mean, I think it depends on like the story in terms of like the hero, like being, like for example, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Luke Skywalker. I don't see him as that the kind of hero that's described by Jung. I mean, Luke Skywalker, the whole his I guess heroism comes from being able to manage like between the two sides.
Yeah.
I mean, his father is Darth Vader.
Yes.
So there's also that. It depends. I would just say it depends on the story exactly.
Of course.
In terms of storytelling, that the hero is the one we're following, so it's like the universe is kind of centric around this individual.
But that's a very interesting example because it's a very American example, I would say. You know, that both sides come up in this one person who is trying so hard to do the right thing and yet carries in his blood the darkness. And that's what Jung was pointing to, was that. And in his world, in the German world of his era, there was Wagnerian, you know, heroes who were magnificent and huge and all-powerful, and then crashed. When they crashed and burned, it was a terrible thing. So that's what he was pointing to. But that's a great example. That's more like a bodhisattva way of carrying both and having to deal with both, the dark and the light together.
And the whole, like, another thing I find interesting about what Lucas did with the whole hero thing is that he almost decentralized it, because in the prequels it's all about Vader.
Yes.
So yeah, it's I like that.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Sort of tagging on to what Julian said, isn't there an issue of the shadow side that is talked about? I don't know if this is a term that Jung pioneered, but the idea that we tend to repress our shadow side,
mm-hmm.
the weaker less attractive
yes.
characteristics that we may have either in somehow inherited through our genes or through whatever our karma, our environment. So that it seems to me that would fit right into what you were saying, that the hero is someone who can kind of integrate all that and not just stomp it out.
Yes, the true hero would do that. And be much more humble than the fake hero who is pretending that it's not, there's no darkness there. That's a very good way of saying it.
And it's actually very helpful to think about that, that Darth Vader was his father.
Yeah.
What a project that would be.
To process it, right?
Oh,
man. I know someone who, I wish I had known who was giving the party. Somebody told me she went to a party where you were invited to come as your shadow. And it doesn't turn out to be dark in the way you would think sometimes. Sometimes people are very shy and afraid of what other people would think would be a real asset. So some people come as, you know, grumpy guys or something, but other people come as nice people that they never let themselves be. So it takes a lot of self-study in order to know how to even represent your shadow, which is also a very interesting exercise. Very helpful to know and become friends with your shadow. It's not so scary then. And it's even less scary if you're able to let it out, you know, in a safe place. Samia?
The exercise you were suggesting that we do, could you be a little more specific about it? Like, you know, kind of build a house, do the gardening, or is it like not worrying, or are they more spiritual things, or are they more wash the car?
Well, usually it starts out that way because those are the things that are on the top of our mind. And the only way you can find out what else is there is just to keep asking. So I can't tell you, and you can't tell yourself, because it's not a thought thing. It's allowing what is in you to come forth. And just to recognize it and get to know it a bit. So it's a surprise.
Is it kind of like, you know, in the Christian world, we, when you pray, is that like, thy will be done? So may the right thing that is, whatever you want to call it, meant to be, is what I want, rather than I really want that car or this or that.
It might come out that way. It might very well.
I mean, isn't this what everybody wants, or is it there's more to that? Or is it what we really want, maybe build another Zendo or have it be smaller or bigger, or, you know?
Well, that's the exercise, is to watch how the mind works around all of those things. The thinginess, the desires, the noble desires, the selfish desires, and whatever else is there.
Just watch it.
Uh-huh.
Ask the question.
Yes.
And don't be looking for answers.
That's right. Just let it tell you. Yeah. You might end up saying all of the above. But the thing is, this is all based on our desire. And he's pointing to just what you're pointing to, actually, with your question. There's a desire beyond all the desires that we carry.